Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the American Horror Story podcast. We're the officially unofficial podcast for American Horror Story on FX. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the first podcast for Season 9, the 1984 season, Episode 1, Camp Redwood. What did you think?
Not only are we back and the show is back, but guess what else is back? All the theories!
There's so many because
classic 80s horror movies have so much to just mine from,
sure.
And it seems like they're doing that in ways that I'm sure nobody's even noticed yet.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just all kinds of theories all over the place. I want to, with your permission, and if you have anything, just drop a place at the very end of the podcast to talk about theories, because I know some people may not want to hear
that's fine.
Spoilers, if they consider it spoilers.
Yeah.
Not really. We don't really know anything.
Right.
But I like this episode a lot.
Uh-huh.
I had a lot of fun. These actors are having a lot of fun. And it was fun, funny to watch.
Yeah, I'm somewhat handicapped in that I'm not very familiar with the 1980s horror scene. Like, I, you know, didn't see the Nightmare on Elm Streets. I didn't see the Halloweens. I haven't seen the Friday the 13th. I mean, I feel like I'm familiar with the tropes just because it was such a big part of the culture at the time. But it'll be interesting to see, because if I get a reference to an 80s scary movie, then it's like, it's got to be pretty fucking broad.
Mm-hmm.
But what I did notice is the Nick Cage movie Mandy. I felt like there's a lot of influence of that on this film, and just like the aesthetic. Now, one thing in Mandy is it gets really crazy and trippy and like drug fueled mayhem towards the end. And I feel like there's maybe a potential with that, with Ray's pharmacy that he's bringing out to the lake. But I started to notice that just in the color palette and how mm-hmm. vivid everything was. I thought the episode was gorgeous, and it's a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Like everyone that's in this like main group of six, it looks like they're just having a time of their lives, and you know, I guess the one criticism is like I haven't found anyone that I really care about, but isn't that disposable 1980s teenage horror stock people?
I don't
people?
Think so.
Really?
I like all of these characters.
I mean, but yeah, like, but do you like not in the way that you like care if they live or die? Like if Montana gets ran over by a truck in the next episode, it's not gonna be, oh my god, how wrenching, she's got a daughter.
No, you I know, think it's like, the, I think it's the I think it's sort of the DNA of these 80s slasher flicks that you expect everyone's going to die.
Right, that's what my point was. That I'm
but
saying
you care
that, like,
about all of them, but you expect them all to die.
Okay. Then
because, I mean, when you say care whether they live or die, you're saying that maybe they should have some sort of character personality traits that make you really identify with them and see yourself in mm-hmm. them in that way, but it's all supposed to be campy,
right,
for lack of a better word.
But that's the other thing, is like I don't expect this season to be very scary at all. Which is kind of a bummer, because that's one of the things I enjoy about American Horror Story, is when it can generate some real creeps. Like, this is just going to be straight up slasher, and to the extent that you don't care about the people being slashed, I don't expect a lot of tension, but I do expect it to be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So this episode delivers on that. I think there's a couple hilarious points. I just love like who's the guy from Glee?
Matthew Morrison.
Everything about him from the time he steps onto the screen was just a hoot, and I'm looking forward to seeing. It was nice to see. John Carroll Lynch.
Yes,
Twisty the Clown back for another like menacing, hulking, violent creature. I'm always tickled to see him, because I always think, you know, my first exposure to him is a very gentle man in Fargo. And I consider him like playing against type as every one of it, except for Twisty was actually that guy too. Well, originally.
Yeah.
So, yeah, looks like it has the makings of a very fun season. Shall we get into the episode?
I think that's a great idea.
So we have a cold open where the 1980s slasher font just momentarily slums in 1970s to let us know that it's 1970. And we are seeing a summer camp threesome that gets interrupted by a giant knife and wielded by a character who will come to appreciate as Mr. Jingles, because he's got a big keychain that he keeps around and it jingle jangles as he walks.
For someone whose defining trait is making noise, he sure killed all of those people silently to the very end.
Well, I feel like...
But he's getting a lot of two for stabs, you know? Two for one. He's really, right. really good at that.
I just feel like every one of these kids had a six-pack of beer and probably some barbiturates in them. So, like, maybe that helped the sound slumber. But he did. Yeah, like, there was a couple gnarly kills. Like, that double head kill where he shoved a knife through both of the kids' faces kissing. And then there's the gruesome through the eye kill. And he just leaves the body awash. Or leaves the cabin, rather, awash in a sea of bodies. But just as he walks out of frame, you can hear some faint moaning implying that someone
lived.
Someone survived.
So as soon as the scene started, the girl who was kind of hesitant to get into the threesome,
right.
the last one to die, I guess, her hair looks exactly like Margaret Booth, the camp counselor's. Mm-hmm. And I thought that it was going to be her that survived. And then she died.
Yeah.
And then she survived later.
Yeah. And then you find when in the flashback, it was recognizably the Margaret character,
yeah.
you know, dressed up as a teenager.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I should save this for later. I'll save it for later.
The thing when is, she talks like, about when, her story. You hit me with that like halfway through the episode. I'm like, but she got stabbed in the eye. How is that possible? And it would have been because it seemed like it was consistent with her character, though.
Right.
You know, like that she was the Brooke of her day. And now she's like a born-again Christian.
Well, we don't know who she was. We just know that she survived. We don't know anything about her except that she survived.
True.
We don't even know if that's true. I'm taking on all the theories.
Ghosts? Ghost Margaret?
No, not a ghost.
Okay.
Is her story true?
Ah.
That's what you got to ask yourself.
Thoughts on the Vaporwave intro?
Amazing.
I keep waiting for the Vaporwave phase to like crest and recede, but it just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I thought it was great. I love the grainy VHS effect. I love the Jane Fonda, you know, sprinkled in with the slashing and the blood and the knives and the sink. It is by far the least scary and creepy intro. I mean, like, even if you had a standard American Horror Story intro, if you put the synth wave version of the AHS sound intro theme over it, it's not going to be scary. Also, I'd love to see this cut with the actual AHS stuff to see if it makes it creepy.
It is the same music.
No, it's got that synth.
They do the
synth.
Same song every year. They just give it a slant that is
right.
of the... Okay.
But you're certainly not going to argue that this version
You're
of
talking
the,
about the coven entrance that's the... Got
no,
the,
they
I guess
all,
they all do.
They all have that kind of creaky, cracky, you know, creepy music, and this is just like, you know, a theme to a 80s drama, and it's a very like synth, and it's a very soaring synth, and it's just not scary. Like, again, I think that's going to be a theme for this year. It's just not scary.
Yeah.
We then go to an aerobics class, and we're introduced to all the main characters with big splash font over a freeze frame over all their faces. Xavier, played by Cody Fearn, who was the Antichrist last season, you'll recall, is the leader of the group. He's leader, certainly, of the Jazzercise group. Montana, which is Billie Lord doing the most.
They're all doing the most here.
They really are. And she,
except for Brooke.
She needs no introduction to AHS fans at this point. And all these characters are pretty much conform to like the Cabin in the Woods archetype. You've got Xavier's the leader, Montana's the slut. Ray, played by Daron Horton, who I enjoyed in Dear White People and season 2 of American Vandal, is like the party guy hookup. He's got the he's supplying the drugs. Chet, played by Gus Kenworthy, actual Olympic athlete Gus Kenworthy, plays the meathead who failed out of the 1984 Olympics by not passing by pissing a pharmacy. And then Brooke, played by Emma Roberts, is the good girl, which, if convention plays out, she will be the sole survivor of
the
season.
The final girl.
Yes. Yes.
She's also a veterinary assistant, and Ray is a medical orderly.
Mm.
So maybe that'll have some
Those medical skills, is it going to be Walking Dead rules? Like they're going to be
I say that, but has had no effect on anything so far. Mm-hmm. They couldn't help the guy in the van.
Right. And they actually have a real qualified nurse mm-hmm. that seems like she's pretty badass that will be introduced here in a bit. Montana introduces herself to the new girl, Brooke, in the shower room. And she says that she wants to be the greatest aerobics competitor of all time. Very, very forward.
So they're meeting for the first time in the shower?
Yes.
You know what bothers me about this scene?
What?
And this is, I think that a lot of women will relate to this.
Okay.
There's a girl code. You leave a stall space in between you and another person that's in there. There's like 20 stalls.
Oh, for sure.
They're right next to each other.
For sure. I just think that like
you, it's not about shame or anything. It's personal space.
Yeah, but she's forward. She's essentially the entire scene saying, "I don't follow the girl. I'm different from other girls. I don't follow the girl code."
I guess you know we don't see how it started. I guess Brooke could have been in there first, and she came and chose the stall right.
Also,
next to her.
she says, "I'm not a les," but then she says it in a way that she implies, but.
But I
could be, you know.
Right, because when they get in the van in a moment, she comforts Madison, or I keep wanting to call her Madison. Mm. She comforts Brooke by putting her hand on her knee, and the camera kind of lingers there, and Brooke makes a face as if maybe she's not a les, maybe she's a little bi.
No, that's what I'm saying. I think Montana is like,
so it's not a lie
like,
to
omni.
Say I'm not.
Yeah, yeah. Then there's a talk of the Night Stalker murders that are going on right now. Xavier identifies himself as a serious actor. I really love his Billy Idol upside down cross earring that he's rocking because it's like, you know, it's also 80s as fuck, and it's a great callback to his Antichrist role.
Yep.
The 1984 Olympics is about to descend upon the city of LA, and they all want to get out, and Xavier offers them all jobs at this camp that he's going to be counseling for in the summer, which is a perfect opportunity to get the fuck out. Later that night, Brooke is at home putting away her jewelry.
Wait,
after her.
I'm sorry. Something just occurred to me.
Okay.
They're leaving the next day mm-hmm. to go to camp.
Yes.
If he had not invited all of his friends and if they had not agreed, would there be one camp counselor there?
I think, yeah, I guess so. I guess so.
Just a thought.
So Brooke's at home putting away her jewelry after a long day of aerobicizing, and she looks longingly at a single solitaire diamond engagement ring before putting away in her jewelry box, which that's interesting. I wonder if she what is that?
Could it be her mother's or a family member or a friend who's died or
did a boy
was she engaged
to her?
Once?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. There's some backstory there. I bet we'll have a flashback in an episode to come to explain all that significance. But suddenly the Night Stalker breaks into her house and attacks and wants her jewelry. And is disappointed at the one diamond ring he gets and makes her swear on Satan that there's no more. And looks like he's probably going to kill her, but a neighbor hears the commotion and bangs on the door and says that the cops are being called. So nice. Brooke is saved.
This is very, I mean, this is ripped from the headlines, Richard Ramirez stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. So you're the true crime expert. I know the only thing I know about Richard Ramirez is that he made an memorable two appearances in the hotel season of American Horror Story.
Mm-hmm.
Was he like a common thief? Because that's kind of uncommon for serial killers to like rob the place, isn't it? That's not like a standard MO.
I don't think so. He's one of those people that is just straight up insane for the sake of being insane. I don't really know what.
As opposed to your Gacy's, your.
I mean, those people, you have something you can point to. They're like, I kill women because I want to wear their skin. I have this compulsion. This guy just decided he wanted to.
Just want a little bit of the
wanted
ultra violence.
He wanted to follow Satan. It wasn't even any specific kind of religious teaching. He just felt like Satan spoke to him. And that's why he always made these women swear to Satan after he did what he did. But what over the summer from 1980,
how many women got away from him too? Because you mentioned that like it's like a like, oh yeah, all the women said swear to Satan. Like how many women got away from him without dying?
I'm not sure.
But enough.
I think this is a lot of like, because he was arrested, of course, and died in jail. I think some of these stories are just what he told. There's a couple women who did survive, so it just kind of adds up.
I gotcha.
But what he did over this in San Francisco from 1984 to 1985 is he would come into people's windows or doors that were left open, and he would rape and kill and rob women.
Damn.
Yeah. Pretty sick stuff.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Obviously, Brooke is freaking out the next day, but has decided to take up Xavier on his offer, despite her busy schedule at veterinary nursing school, to hide out at the camp with him and get paid for it, because the cops are investigating, but they haven't found anything, and she's terrified. Chet gets triggered by Ray's joke about random drug tests, because apparently he was 0.001% of something in his blood away from being in the Olympics, but... Montana's opinion is that he pissed a pharmacy, so Chet maintains his innocence. I'm not sure if they're implying, because there's a lot of implications that he abused steroids, that it wasn't just like coke or marijuana in his blood, that, you know, he's got this perfect sculpted body, he's prone to outbursts of probably inappropriate anger, and his friends are just highly skeptical of him being clean, so that's something to keep your eye on. Ray offers coke and weed to everyone, and everyone accepts except for Brooke, who demurs. I love that Xavier's custom van is called the Fantasy.
It's so good.
And they pull into the service station, manned by Patrick Swayze's kid brother.
Yeah.
Xavier takes this opportunity to check his answering machine remotely because they don't have phones at the camp Redwood.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly who said the phone lines were cut, but I think it's here that he says that, you know, the Camp Redwood phone lines don't work. Maybe they're not set up yet, but Brooke says they're cut later.
Yeah.
So he makes the phone call here and now, which I thought was going to be ominous. That if something did happen at the camp, the nearest phone is so far away.
Yeah, it's the actual message is like this deep kind of raspy voice saying, you thought you could take your dick out of LA? I know where your dick's at. I'm coming for your dick. Your dick. And he's like, oh, that's weird. And Xavier is, his effect is not changed by any of this information. Like,
he gets messages like that all the
time. That's just the guy who's hot for him in aerobics class.
Yeah, that's the kind of person that leaves a trail of broken hearts, I'm sure of it.
Maybe a trail of severed dicks. Patrick Swayze's brother opines that if they go to Redwood summer camp, they'll all die. Like, everyone except for the camp chef, or the camp cook, hates this place, as we'll find out.
So, Camp Redwood
is...
was previously used in a movie from 1983 called The Final Terror. It's a horror movie that's set, or it takes place at a summer camp. Like a lot of these are.
I thought that on the way to the camp, after they get out of the Swayze brothers auto repair center, I know what you did last summer, some hippie looking hyper hiker guy. He was hyper, but then he got hit by a van, and now he's unconscious. He actually seems pretty okay for being plowed into by this giant custom van, and he has pre-existing scratches and cuts on him. So Xavier quickly has the idea of like, oh, well, he was kind of fucked up and by the road, and we'll just take him, and yeah, there'll be somebody at camp that can take care of him. And everyone kind of rolls with that.
Just hope he doesn't remember.
Yeah. There's actually a really gorgeous, almost Kubrickian establishing shot of Camp Redwood and the lake and the property as it kind of like drone or crane shots over the woods and you see everything. I thought that was really cool. You kind of get the lay of the land. And we quickly meet Margaret Booth, the born-again Christian owner of this camp. But before we get too much into her story, we have a hyper hiker that needs medical attention. So we then meet the camp nurse, played by Angelica Ross.
Yes.
From Ryan Murphy's other joint, Pose.
Nurse Rita.
Nurse Candy. Handy Rita.
Handy Rita.
Sounds
sounds like a tasty drink.
Yeah, sounds like a new malt beverage from Budweiser.
I'm going to make one of those next week. We'll have Candy Ritas for the podcast.
She name drops a Hawthorne hospital that she normally works at.
Yes, and that shares a name with something else.
Yeah, Hawthorne School for Gifted. Yeah, is it? That was the male witch school from
Apocalypse last year?
Yeah.
It was called the Hawthorne School for Exceptional Young Men.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if the Hawthorne Hospital turns into this school later.
Be very, very interested to see if that might just be a fun name drop Easter egg, or we could get some witches and warlocks, which I didn't feel. I felt like, honestly, we got deprived of a whole other season, a whole other part two of the Apocalypse season. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I could get down to some witchy stuff going on this year.
Yeah.
We then meet Chef Birdie. Xavier hilariously calls dibs on her, and she's like, "Honey, you don't know. You wouldn't know what to do with it if you got it. Now help us, lady. Help a lady fill up her pantry."
That's hilarious.
So fucking hot. So fucking hot. And she's the first person that seems genuinely enthused that Redwood is reopening. What do you make of it? I mean,
she seems enthused?
Yeah, no, she's excited. She says, "I had so many good memories, and as soon as I found out it's going to open, that I was the first to volunteer." And she seems like super, super ready for this to go back to being a happy memory place.
Yeah, they don't say it in the episode, but her last name is actually Red Herring. This is Chef Birdie Red Herring.
Yeah.
She is here to make you think that she's involved in some way, but she's really not. She's just someone's got to have great memories.
Mm. Yeah, I'm going to see. It's like, you know, I'm trying to think of, like, has anyone definitively been killed yet? Because, like, man, episode two is going to be a bummer, but, like, the hiker guy
seems super dead.
He's super dead, but, like, no one knows about it except for Emma Roberts, except for Brooke. But we'll see how that goes. So Margaret then explains that she has very strict ideas on how the camp counselors should comport themselves. There's going to be no co-ed shacking up. There's going to be no drugs, no smoking, no drinking. She is tired of the world and its buttocks revealing underwear, its pornography, and its Van Halen. She's a friend of Charles Keating, which led the campaign against Larry Flint in our own home city of Cincinnati.
Tell the listeners who those people are and what that means.
I don't know who Charles Keating is. I know, Larry Flynn is an infamous man around Cincinnati. He's Cincinnati is a town to this day that does not allow pornography sold within its city limits. I think that's still true. Yet he was one of the largest pornographies in the world. Was he Hustler or Penthouse? I think he was Hustler. He published Hustler out of Cincinnati. I don't know who Charles Keating is. I'm assuming it's the People versus Larry Flint, that he was involved in that business.
Who says he's a athlete, lawyer, real estate developer, banker, financier, and activist.
Quit. Six triple threat.
Best known for his role in the savings and loan scandal of the late 80s.
Ah.
And he was a champion swimmer for the University of Cincinnati.
Nothing about Larry Flint?
No.
He's best known for a savings and loan scandal?
It just says for his role in it.
Huh.
I don't know if that means he was bad or he was good.
Yeah.
But whatever. This is in the Charles Keating podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe if it's important, I'm sure Ryan Murphy will provide us a flashback.
He's got to be a good person if she considers him a dear friend.
A dear friend.
You know what? She doesn't have to be ultra religious, but... I think those are just very fair rules. It's a camp. It's a summer camp for kids.
Sure, sure, sure.
Maybe, you shouldn't be doing drugs anytime you work.
Sure.
Except when you podcast.
Yeah.
And
I defy you to get through a camp counselor's session of summer snot-nosed children without any drugs or alcohol.
No, I absolutely would. I mean, the rules are there for a reason.
To be broken.
So that it'll encourage you to be discreet about it.
There
I think that's what rules are for.
Just to curb it a little bit. She's also wealthy from her husband's fortune. She's a young widow, and I wrote in my notes,
She made a face when she said my husband Walter's untimely death.
Yeah. Some fishy shit going on there. So at the first night of No Kids Campfire, Nurse Rita joins them to tell them the story of Mr. Jingles, who was one Benjamin Richter, a Vietnam vet who had many, many kills to his name.
Highest kill rate.
Highest kill rate. Kept a string of ears as a necklace around his neck. You know, that's a thing.
I think there's a string of ears in this office right
there
now.
There is, actually. So back in, I think it was season two of The Walking Dead.
Yes.
The Walking Dead. Starring Christopher Walken. Daryl was keeping a string of zombie ears, and yeah. Someone sent me a soap on a rope version of that, and it's hanging up here in the office. Anyway, so Margaret shows up to scold them all for drinking, question her choice of clove cigarettes, and reveal that not only is Mr. Jingles real, but she was that sole survivor of the cabin massacre of 1970. And she does it by revealing the fact that she has a missing ear. Turns out she was in that cabin. She was stabbed. She was dying. And Jesus saved her with his light.
Jesus, take the ear.
Which is actually shown on the show to be a 60-watt Sylvanian light bulb. So there's some theology for you.
Uh-huh.
She followed bald move rule number two in surviving a massacre flawlessly. She mm-hmm. pretended to be dead so hard that when the guy cut his ear off, she didn't even flinch.
Yes.
Bravo. And it paid off.
Yeah.
Rule number two will save your life. If you're ever in a massacre, bloody massacre, and you manage to survive and the bad guys are still walking, just lay there and play dead. Lay there and play dead.
If the bad guys are still Christopher Walken, just play dead.
You gotta play dead. That's how you survive.
There is another Richard Ramirez Night Stalker reference here.
No way.
I think, maybe. So one of his victims he strangled her with like a telephone wire so hard that sparks flew out.
What the fuck?
And then once he was done, she woke up and started breathing. And he left, and he didn't, like, complete the kill because he assumed that Jesus had intervened at that moment, and he left her.
Mm. I just imagine him sliding out the door, Satan, Satan, Satan. You
know? Satan, Satan.
meanwhile, in the so she reveals that this Mr. Jingles was found guilty and put away. But she was always haunted by the memory of him, which is why she bought the camp, because she wants to redeem it from those dark times. Meanwhile, in the infirmary, the hiker awakens and reveals that he, too, was the victim of an ear hunter. And it looked like it's a fresh ear hunt. Like it's an open wound. It's not a nicely sealed one like
Margaret's.
Yeah, it's
still kind of bloody or something. Nurse Rita didn't even look and see.
Right? She's a hell of an ER. Because the thing is, he's got injuries all over his body. She's just like, you know, he got knocked about. Let's put him up.
But there's so much more blood there than anywhere else.
Right. I mean, didn't even give him a proper cleaning.
No.
So this can't be Mr. Jingles.
Timeline question, yeah.
Yeah, it can't be, right?
No, because he doesn't, I mean, unless we're going to get some flashback kind of time card in the next episode.
Maybe there's a 1984 /5 Back to the Future reference, and Mr. Jingles is actually capable of time traveling in a shitty work truck. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's a flux capacitor in that baby. Once he gets it up to 88, watch out.
All theories. We're taking all theories.
Watch out. He can go back a day in time and fresh hunt him up some hyper hiker ear. Brooke checks in on the hiker, who freaks the fuck out when he realizes that he's there at Camp Redwood. He starts screaming for everyone to get out, that something terrible is to happen. She goes back to their shared dorm cabin and reveals this information. And just then some heavy thudding steps approach the camp, but it's not Mr. Jingles. It's the majestic Trevor.
The majestic.
And his enormous baby elephant sized cock. That's probably what was the thudding noise, honestly.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, yeah.
It caused a whole Jane Fonda video reshoot.
It did. He busts her balls a little bit about Margaret's restrictive rules before revealing he's joking. And he says that he has a bet with himself that he's going to bang her before the end of the summer. Which Chet's like, you got a bet with yourself? He's like, yeah. Which...
best line in the episode.
Of course he does. Of course he does. Who else would he bet with? He only bets with equals, okay? He says that he is in the Three's Company credits at the very end, behind the stars as they're kind of like bicycling down the boardwalk. You looked up this credit sequence.
Yes.
You fact-checked his ass.
We watched it together. And in the very opening, there's a boardwalk that's the camera's kind of zooming in on with lots of people. Mm-hmm. But at the very end of the credit sequence, when they're riding their bikes, there's nobody there. There's not a single soul.
I wonder if when he says I'm in the background, he literally means his condo's in the background and he's like standing in the window.
Maybe he's in the ocean or something.
Yeah, like you'd like on a standard definition television, you'd never, ever, ever be able to see him. But like still good enough for him. His legit claim to fame is that he was a co-star in a Jane Fonda workout video, but they had to reshoot it and take him out because he kept drawing the camera away from Miss Fonda.
Yeah, he was not the co-star.
And Montana reveals that she has gotten her hands on a bootleg copy of this aerobics video and likes to pleasure herself to it.
It's the first thing she ever pleasured herself to.
Again, Billie Lord is having an enormous amount of fun in this role.
Yes.
And I love it.
Yes. Her and Matthew Morrison. This is going to be a great team up.
I love the, because they don't explain how this happens, but Montana and Trevor just go skinny dipping. Like, just dip out on everybody, go in the lake.
That was going to be my question for you. Is this the longest fucking day? This is the longest fucking night in
yes.
the entire history of nights.
Yeah, between midnight and 4 o'clock in the morning, there was 3 full days.
There's a fireside chat. They're watching TV for hours.
Yeah.
They have a swim.
Yeah.
They watch TV again. They all go have an infirmary invention. They go back to watching TV again all night.
And this, and we started off with the like campfire cookout thing.
Yeah.
So they go skinny dipping. Trevor goes below the surface to go below her surface. And Montana gets freaked out when she sees a truck or a van parked across the lake, turning on their headlights, spying on them.
I'm freaked out that people still think or portray in movies that water sex works.
Especially water oral sex.
Yeah.
Like, so like, okay.
The thigh squeezing your head was the problem.
Right. So I don't know how long you can hold your breath. Maybe a minute, maybe 2 minutes. Like, what are we doing down here?
Yeah.
Come on. And water sex in a fucking lake?
Yeah.
It's not even like yeah. the ocean or some kind of like flowing stream. It's a stagnant puddle of water you're fucking in.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't think that would be good for the lady chamber.
No.
I'm not a OBGYN, but it just stands a reason.
Mm-hmm.
There's amoebas. There's water bears. There's tardigrades.
Water bears?
There's hydras. There are all kinds of bacteria and giggly goos in there.
Maybe this is going to turn into one of those horror movies.
Not to mention like, all the stuff that's inside Trevor himself.
Like cabin fever. Could be turning into cabin fever.
She squeezes his head, and which causes him to resurface, and, you know, she, for whatever reason, is embarrassed to say she was scared by the guy creeping on him, so she makes a joke about the storm coming and him having that lightning rod, and they get out of the water. Meanwhile, at some unnamed mental institution, the inmates are running wild as the asylum administrator, I think, pulls up and speaks to the head of security, which you might recognize as Mulder and Scully's boss from the X-Files.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Jingles has escaped by faking his suicide by hanging, which
Very
we
clever.
Did not get 30 minutes into the first episode before the first
flashback.
Unnecessary flashback. Like,
3 hours earlier, are you kidding me?
Why the fuck? What possible reason is there to do it this way rather than cutting this into the action to build tension? Like, you see, you're introduced to Margaret and her reopening the camp, and then you could cut to Mr. Jangles, like, seeing this in the newspaper and circling in red, and you could go back to doing the kids fucking around, and you could do Mr. Jangles hanging himself, and then, like, why can't we tell a linear story in this fucking show again?
I don't know.
Anyway.
So you don't look too closely at the timeline. The night goes on forever. I still think it's...
That's probably right.
Brooke going with them the next day? What mm-hmm. time did they leave? How far away is the camp from where they live? Did the police not have any follow-up questions?
Did she like call them at 4 o'clock in the morning after the cops left and said, guys, are you still going to the camp tomorrow? Let me meet you.
Right.
Did she have everyone's phone numbers? Like,
she just had one phone number.
Yeah.
I don't know. No details.
I don't think Montana sleeps. So that actually story checks out. If she got Montana's phone number, she'd call at 4 o'clock in the morning. She wakes up with a knife. Or she doesn't wake. She just opens her eyes. She pretends to sleep. She pretends to wake up with her knife. And's like, yes, Montana speaking. So I just actually did a little false flashback of my own. The administrator then finds a newspaper in Mr. Jangle's cell, or I guess his room, his padded room. that has a newspaper clipping detailing Margaret's plan to reopen Camp Redwood mm-hmm. with her face in the 1970s version and the 1984 version. They're both circled in red. Probably
bad news.
Which looks
like blood.
Yeah. Meanwhile, at the Swayze's Brothers service station, we get a failed jump scare from a cat. Then Mr. Jangles drops a fucking classic car on poor Don Swayze and stomps his face into bloody red salsa before stealing his keys.
Gross.
Does Don Swayze have the keys to the camp, or is Mr. Jangles just got to have a jingle? Like,
I mean, he seemed like it provided an intense amount of relief when he heard the jingling again.
Yeah.
And maybe he stole his car.
I don't know, because he was also jingling when he was just walking around. I don't know. Maybe he's just like a key master. That's his thing. He's got to have keys. Lots of keys. He's a complicated man, and keys is the key to unlocking him.
His parents never gave him those plastic keys to play with as a child, and it just really traumatized him.
Yeah, right. Or they're on the mobile, but he just never could reach them, yep. And no one paid attention to him. So, I mean, that hot theory. I like it. I'm subscribing.
You.
Back at the camp, the counselors settle in to watch the Olympics opening ceremonies, which apparently is broadcasting at 3 o'clock in the morning,
yep.
While Chet broods about not being part of it. Isn't it broad daylight? Like, they're watching this in the hills of California in the same fucking time zone. Okay, we'll not pay too much attention to that. Maybe it's a rebroadcast.
Maybe it is. I mean, how long is that? Nope, it's still broad daylight.
Yep. Chet Roid rages out at Ray for joking around about him missing the cut, which leads to Ray getting his hand cut. I don't know how throwing an empty beer can slice your fucking palm almost to the bone, but it did.
Well, I mean, he crushed it, and it gives it those sharp edges.
That's true.
And I'm assuming, like, the steroid strength just fucking launched it at him. Did you watch closely when it impacts his hand?
Uh-uh.
Like, I believed it.
Really?
Yeah, he hit him hard.
Hmm.
I don't know
how
many times.
It's half full of beer, too. It's just the weight. It's the sharpness is fine, but, like, the depth of the cut, and I don't care how sharp it is.
I think it's the sharpness.
Yeah?
I think it's the angle that it comes in.
Hmm.
It could go sideways and slice deep.
I see.
You know what I mean?
And plus, you know, he did have that the anabolic enhanced strength, so...
Mm-hmm.
Ray leaves for the washroom to get his wound cleaned out, and Brooke follows him because she's the good girl and she wants to be a veterinarian assistant, and why not start taking care of mammals right now? We got one. He's wounded. He needs some bandaging.
Also, Ray is a medical orderly, so
true.
Maybe,
by
maybe
their
help
powers
yourself.
Combined, wonder twin powers.
Do you think they're gonna have a relationship?
I don't know. They did have that kind of, like, there was a little bit of a tenderness to that scene.
Yeah.
But it could just be her good bedside manner.
Yeah. I think she's still nursing this crush on Chet. But, you know, if you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with.
Yep. Why not? Meanwhile, Mr. Jingles arrives at camp, and that's what he does. He just arrives.
Oh, another new great theory just popped up into my head.
Uh-oh.
Do you think the reason Chet is so jealous of Trevor is because using steroids gave him a micro penis, and Trevor's got this gigantic penis?
He's got the all-natural bod with the all-natural
schlong.
Isn't that
the thing that steroids do?
It's one, I heard it shrinks your testicles.
Oh.
I don't know if it actually affects the size of one's member. I don't know. I don't touch the stuff.
If you're a steroid user, please write in and tell us about the size of your penis.
I was actually born with a congenital condition where my testicles are already the size of a snow pea. So I didn't want, like, and when is like time to get into sports in high school, I didn't want to take the chance.
Yeah, no.
Like, Jesus, what do these disappear?
Yeah.
Brooke helps him bandage up. He goes to fetch some iodine and further supplies from the infirmary, where she finds the hyper hiker dead and strung up on the door. Mr. Jangles bursts in, and she flees screaming in a desperate but extremely clumsy attempt to get away. She falls down like 11 million times.
She takes a thick tree branch, like as thick as my thigh,
right,
to her face.
She is covered in mud. She looks at Arnold Schwarzenegger in Act 3 of The Predator. She busts in. Of course, she makes it back to the cabin because she's the good girl. She's Emma Roberts. And this is the first episode. What were you thinking? The whole gang gears up to go look for the killer, but finds nothing, not even in the infirmary. There's no blood. There's no, like, bloody body-shaped hyper-hiker mark on the door. And everyone's starting to be very skeptical about this girl and her ability to handle a contact high when Margaret shows up to send them all to bed. Margaret suddenly showing up.
Mm-hmm.
Margaret with a vested interest for nothing to go wrong in the camp okay. showing up.
So here is my theory.
Uh-huh.
Okay, for one, where did they think happened to the hiker? I would definitely believe Brooke a little bit.
I think they just think that he boned off, and like they're invested mm-hmm. in him. Like that's good for them, so yeah. they believe it.
He'll be back with the police. Let's go run him down again.
yeah. I mean, I don't think he's remembering. Like even if there's no way. They were going down a road like 30, 40 miles an hour, and yeah. the way they filmed that is he just like took the van full force to the face. So if he survives, there's no way he remembers it.
No.
But
okay, so here's the theory. This has Mr. Jingles escaping from the asylum has a lot of Halloween vibes to it. Mm. Are you familiar with that franchise? Seen any of them?
A little bit.
The Michael Myers, the antagonist in that whole series, he is out and chasing down his sister.
Mm.
I think
Jamie Lee Curtis is Michael Myers' sister? No. Is that actually wow. I thought I saw Halloween. But I guess maybe not. Or maybe I was just super high because it's something I probably watched at the gym.
But I think that Margaret is going to turn out to be Mr. Jingle's sister. And I think she's helping him. And I think she's the one with the car and the headlights. And I think she's the one that moved the body and cleaned up. Because Mr. Jingles doesn't seem, hinged enough to get that done.
Huh.
And I don't think she's telling the truth about her story of surviving, or maybe it's not. Maybe she's not his sister, and she's just a fan. Because that happens sometimes. That Stockholm-y thing where you are a victim of someone, and then
right, you get me kind of become obsessed.
Right.
Interesting theory.
Yeah.
That someone pointed out. I saw this on Reddit. The connection that the hospital administrator, her garb is very reminiscent of the Jamie Lee Curtis character from Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely that connection there. So later that evening, the endless night, the phone that was established at the in as we pulled into the camp as being right there by the entrance starts ringing off the hook. Brooke wakes up Montana and hilariously find out she sleeps with a switchblade under her and it's instantly ready to use it.
The delivery of "I have a suspicious nature." She's answered that question
before. Oh my god, it's so good. Brooke wants to investigate since they were told the phone lines are cut and what the fuck. Montana doesn't give a fuck. She goes out there alone, answers a deadline as a night stalker steps out and reveals himself, and then
do you want to talk about the theories first?
I thought you wanted to do that at the very, very end.
I guess I could.
It's up to you. You're the producer.
No, I want to talk about this stuff first.
Okay.
Okay, so I want to talk about this, the theories that are out there.
There's going to be some light theory crafting.
Yeah.
Heavy theory crafting.
Theories is too strong.
Industrial theory crafting.
I just want to talk about connections and things like that. So if you think knowing the plot of Halloween and how Jamie Lee Curtis is actually Michael Myers' sister, well, I waited too long to warn you. But, if it turns out to be true, you might consider it retroactively a spoiler.
Jesus Christ, you're halfway through the Ford factory tour before you tell them, hey, we're about to tour the Ford factory.
People get really, really intense about their spoilers mm-hmm. and what they consider them to be. So I have heard, and I don't remember where, I think some Deadline article or Reddit or something like that, and I wish I could credit this person appropriately, but someone is thinking that this is going to have a Roanoke or Cabin in the Woods approach as like a meta.
Is this someone Ryan Murphy and is the source Ryan Murphy's Twitter feed? Because if you don't want if you don't want American Horror Story spoilers, stay the fuck away from this man and in any media outlet that he speaks to. But anyway, continue.
We know that Ryan Murphy's not, or FX, Ryan Murphy, whoever, they're not doing screeners for this season.
Yeah.
Which we were hoping to get.
Yeah.
They're not doing them.
That would have made our Friday mornings a lot less hectic, but fuck it.
So what would you...
Do it live.
What would you think about that? If we get halfway through the season, it's 1984 themed, and then it turns out that it's a simulation or something like that.
If it's some kind of simulation, or I saw someone saying it might be a movie set, I would nah. I don't like that.
What if it's the aliens from Asylum that are just controlling everything?
Aliens, like some kind of alien fuckery, I could get down with.
Yeah.
Because that's the one thing that's never paid off in a other season, right?
No, and I've been begging for it every year.
Yeah, I think there's been 4 seasons running. You've been predicting the aliens to come, so maybe maybe lucky number 9.
Yes. Also, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that there has been an asylum in this anthology before, in the second season,
right.
Briarcliff.
But wasn't that on the
east? It was in Massachusetts.
Okay. So is it displaced through time and space?
I don't know. But it might not have anything to do with it, except for the fact that the kids from Asylum would be 24 or 5 right now.
Mm.
You think they're going to show up at some point?
No.
I think so. I hope so.
Something. I wonder why they're being coy, because we drove past a sign, and maybe you could see it if you had a really crystal clear 1080p stream, but the way we watched it, like, we tried to freeze frame and see what the name of it is, and it looked like it was a name that was like something something Asylum, and the first word looked like it was 3 letters, and then the like second word was like Mar 5 to something. 6, but you know, it's like you're trying to look at it through a window streaked with rain, and you had the compression artifacts. We couldn't tell, but I don't know. Maybe there is some kind of bomb, kind of like either Easter egg in the vein of Hawthorne Hospital, or maybe there's actually something there that we'll find out.
Mm-hmm. So the final thing I wanted to mention, and I was reading this article that was like, well, all the seasons are connected in some way.
Right.
And it's been a long-held fan theory that all of the seasons, since there's 9 now, are going to represent each a circle of hell.
Right.
And then links to the fan who posted the theory.
Right.
And it's none other than Ryan fucking Murphy's Instagram account, and I'm not kidding you.
Seriously?
Yes.
So he's trafficking in theories on his own product?
I don't know, but it's bizarre. So let me break this down for you.
Okay. Please do.
9 circles of hell are Limbo, which is Murder House. Gluttony, which is Hotel. Greed, which is Freak Show. Anger.
How does any of this check out? I would think Greed would be Hotel.
He obviously didn't have this theory when he started writing, Aaron.
Oh, okay. But even backfitting it, come on, man.
Right. Wrath is Roanoke. Heresy is Cult. There's...
Blasphem is a heresy. Oh, okay. So...
What? Violence, which doesn't have anything there. Fraud, which is Asylum.
Wait a
second.
And
then Treachery, which is Coven.
Those are not the deadly sins that I'm familiar with, I don't think.
They're not the deadly sins. They're the 9 circles of hell.
Oh, circles of hell. Right. Okay, gotcha.
Limbo, lust, gluttony, greed, anger, heresy, violence, fraud, treachery.
Gotcha.
I said wrath. That was my bad. So everyone's thinking that this season is going to be lust, which does make a lot of sense. He seems to be writing to it now.
I mean, I've seen Cabin in the Woods. Like, teenagers having sex brings serial killers. It's just science.
It's science.
Yeah.
It's just... science.
Run from it, hide from it. Premarital sex always finds you. I've heard we got a little bit of feedback. If you want to send in feedback, you can do so at ahs@baldmove.com, or we also have a forum thread each week for people that want to discuss it with themselves amongst their fellow fans. Cecily, what are the fans saying?
Our first one is from William, who says, I know the season hasn't even started yet, but I wanted to get a prediction out there right away. I don't think the Friday the 13th thing they're doing is going to be enough to sustain an entire season, even if it's a short one. So I predict they're going to pull Roanoke, and the first half of the season will take place in 1984 with all the stuff we've seen. Then they will fast forward to 2019 for the second half of the season, making it a sort of sequel to the events in 1984. I can see Ryan Murphy doing something like this as a commentary on sequels and reboots, kind of the way Scream 4 did. This is where I got my theory. William wrote in, I think, a couple weeks ahead of the premiere.
Uh-huh.
I'm glad I can credit you, William. Great theory. I think it's got some legs.
I think it would be interesting because, like, there's got to be at least an episode or two flashback to 1970 to see what the fuck, you know, how this all started. I could even see, like, a sympathetic flashback to Vietnam so you can see.
Oh, there will be flashbacks.
Oh, yeah. So you can see Mr. Jingle's side of the story. But yeah, I mean, that was one of my, it's like, huh, I wonder how long this conceit can last. You know, how long can you just riff off 1980s horror movies before you run out of steam. I mean, it's never stopped them before. So we'll see. We'll see.
Eric W. Just got to start with that. I've been listening since you guys covered Freak Show, and I love this podcast. Always happy to see it's back.
Is that Seattle, Eric?
Eric W.? No.
Okay.
Anyways,
I still love you, Eric, even though you're not Seattle, Eric.
Anyways, the season premiere, I thought it was pretty solid. The new title sequence was A1, loving the 80s theme. It was based on a fan-made title sequence, and honestly, it's one of the best.
No shit. Yeah. That's kind of ballsy. Yeah, like aping something a fan did because, I don't know, I'm sure they got some kind of, like, release or whatever. The cool thing that would be to pay him.
Yeah.
Pay him, like, some kind of creative, what does it cost to have someone develop a concept for you, $50,000 in Hollywood? Give him $50,000.
Oh, my God, really?
I don't know.
That's a lot. The completely new cast gave the show a breath of fresh air. Sure, it's no Jessica Lange or Sarah Paulson, but it's a much-needed change from going stale. I'm excited for new additions like Angelica Ross. Hopefully she survives her a while, if not one of the final people.
This is the... we don't have Evan Peters. We don't have Sarah Paulson. Don't have any moist upper lips.
Mm-hmm. No, Russell Edgington?
Yeah.
Yet?
Yeah, he might come back. This is a most un-AHS-like AHS so far because of all the departures and switch-ups.
Billy Lord actually has emotion. Her and Matthew Morrison are great together. I don't want pure comedy from the show, but they deliver it just enough to not annoy me. Emma Roberts, Cody Fearn, Gus Kenworthy are all blah. Darren Horton hasn't had enough screen time other than he loves drugs. Leslie Grossman was annoying, but her character is interesting. Hopefully the backstory makes up for her being annoying. Who's her husband? Why is she a religious nut? Why is every other person on the show a moron? Finally, in all caps, John Carroll Lynch. That's all. That's the tweet. Fucking send.
Hell yeah. Bring that twisty thunder.
I do not agree that Emma Roberts, Cody Fearn, and Gus Kenworthy were blah. I think Emma Roberts is playing demure, like you said, and that's the character.
Yeah. Look at Cody Fearn's face when, like, Montana says, fuck it, I'm in. And he gives that, like, hell yeah. Like, it's so, I mean, they're doing a thing, and the thing is perfect.
Yeah.
They're doing exactly what is required and ask. And I actually thought, who's the skier, the X Game skier,
Gus Kenworthy?
Ken Kenworthy, yeah. I actually thought he was surprisingly good because when you said that he was an actual Olympic athlete, I'm like, really? Because I normally associate professional athletes with a lack of acting ability. I thought he was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for AHS.
Right.
This isn't The Leftovers.
It continues, all I want from the season is genuine scares and at the very least a cohesive story. That's probably asking too much, but I think this episode is right on track. I haven't been scared by this show since Roanoke. All it seems to do anymore is try to be funny, like the morons in Silicon Valley making sex dolls last season. I'm sick of it. I was reading some theories from Twitter, and they were saying Leslie Grossman's character is in on the murders or that she framed Mr. Jingles and wants revenge on the sinners, the new counselors. Other than that, nothing else. But Ryan Murphy will say something soon if he still cares about the show. All right.
He'll say something soon regardless.
Yeah. Wayne. Just finished watching the first episode, and I love it. The campy acting and slasher theme are perfect for AHS. This is the happiest I've been after a season opener since Freak Show.
High praise.
Billy Lord is a scene stealer from the get-go, but Emma Roberts as a plain Jane might not work when she plays a smart-ass bitch, so we'll have to wait and see.
I was going to say, she is playing very against her AHS type.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I didn't like was seeing Mr. Jingle's face. Leaving his face hidden or not showing it leaves intrigue and mystery, but showing him and his not-scary face blows that immediately, unless it turns out to be a red herring. See? The red herrings are related.
Mm.
Oh, no, wait, that was the cook. Maybe he's related to the cook.
The cook is the mother.
Ah!
That's how he got the job!
nepotism is just rampant in the 80s. It's John T says, it's a welcome sight when you guys are back for another season, because no matter how good or bad the season is, you two make it an entertaining ride.
I mean, we've tried to kill show. Like every other show we've been on, we've racked up another death. What show did we just kill?
What show did we just kill?
We just covered a show and we killed it.
I don't remember.
Harlots.
Oh yeah, maybe not unconfirmed kill.
I think we killed. Not a confirmed kill. Killed harlots. Like how did we kill True Blood, Banshee, Harlots, and American Horror Story has survived like six seasons of us.
I know, it's just like, it's exactly like Michael Myers. It just keeps coming back, yeah. Even though you think it's dead.
Yeah, it's got two more seasons after this one.
Well, here's the thing. Ryan Murphy, with now he's doing this Nine Circles of Hell thing.
Right.
Maybe there's going to be the final season is going to be like the purgatory, because that's how Dante's Inferno ends.
I thought there's two more seasons left after this one, like 10 and 11.
I don't know.
You got purgatory, then heaven.
Are you telling me I'm going to be doing this for another 2 years?
The season 11 is going to be essentially the good place. Which was the bad? Okay, never mind. That doesn't track. It's going to be the real good place.
We are in the bad place. We are in the actual bad place.
I think I just really, that's a major good place spoiler. But you know what? You're three seasons behind. Get the hell out of here.
That's your problem.
Yeah, bold move policy is two seasons past, no spoiler law.
This season feels like it's right up Aaron's wheelhouse and with all the 80s nostalgia. That said, would you two be okay if this season was nothing more than an entertaining nostalgia-filled trope fest? Because that's something I can definitely get into.
Yeah, like this show needs to be scary or needs to be fun.
And how, John T?
It really struggles when it tries to do both at once. It just kind of struggles. Like, even the good seasons, there's like episode or two that just can't get out of that wet paper bag to save its life. So,
yes.
But that's part of the fun. Like, I've never seen it. Like, it's crazy. If you go to this place's subreddit, the American Horror Story subreddit, mm-hmm. there's like 110,000 people. It's a hugely active place to be. Mm-hmm. But all of the memes on the front page are essentially, why do we keep doing this to each other? Or why do we, like, every season, it's like we swear that we're out on this show. And then you start seeing the posters. You start seeing the teasers on YouTube. And you start seeing Ryan Murphy's Twitter feed activate. And you're like, yeah, I'm back in.
I assume.
Oh, AJ's 1984, though? Okay, yeah.
I assume that Ryan Murphy's got to be having the same relationship.
Yeah.
Because did he do Claws? Or is that something else?
Did he do Claws?
Because he's made, I mean, because.
He's so prolific. Holy shit.
He's done so many other things. I thought Scream Queens was more popular, and that just stopped. I don't know what happened to that. I never watched it.
I didn't either.
He's doing Pose now, which I hear is great. He's doing this.
Claws is created by Elliot Lawrence, so we cannot credit Murphy for that.
Okay. It's American Crime Stories and a bunch of other things. Mm-hmm. And I'm just surprised that he still even wants to be doing this.
I wonder, like, if he just, like, shows up in the writer's room and just is like, Friday the 13th and Halloween and Nightmare on Elm Street, go. And then just walks out. And then he comes back in like 3 weeks later. I need more members only jackets. And he just takes maybe that's his level of involvement at this point.
Maybe.
Which is why he's so excited to share things on his Twitter, because he's more of a fan than a producer at this point.
Himself.
Yeah, he's like, holy shit, this is dope. Can you believe this theory, guys? Nine Circles of Hell.
What? He's like, it works.
He's just a super fan at this point.
We are all Ryan Murphy.
Yeah. The only difference is his fan theories get worked into the script.
And this next piece of feedback is from R.M. Could be short for Ryan Murphy. No, I'm just kidding. It's from Michelle. Really into this season so far. Love the 80s of it all, and especially the soundtrack. I'll be creating and linking a Spotify playlist in the forums. She has done that. If you are a Club Bald Move member, check out our forums. Michelle's got a little treat for you in there. The opening.
Hey-o.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to throw it in the show notes.
Yeah. Do it.
Thank you for doing that, Michelle.
It is. It's so funny, though. Like, Emma Roberts fleeing from Mr. Jangles is that synth wave is in it. It's really funny.
Yeah.
I just can't see it possibly building any kind of real tension, though. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
The opening credits kind of threw me, but I'm so here for it all. Knowing that Aaron doesn't like when AHS strays from the style of the OG credit sequence.
Yeah,
you got a choice for Ann earlier.
you got me pinned there, Michelle.
I wonder how he felt about this season.
You know exactly how I felt about it.
Also, what do we think about the born-again murder survivor, Margaret Booth? I think there's more to her that we will see later. I don't think she's as goody-goody as she's making everyone believe. Word, Michelle. She is absolutely up to something.
Safe bet. Safest of bets.
The very least in the husband murdering game.
Oh, yeah.
Which, like, same.
Very least in the my camp has got another killer going, I need to cover it up game.
Mm-hmm.
Those are mortal locks.
Lastly, some are speculating that this season might swerve and change direction a la the Roanoke season and crash directly into something else. So yeah, that seems to be a crash into a hyper hiker.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be a pretty popular theory.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see what Ryan Murphy's Instagram says.
The hyper-hiker is representative of a linear, coherent plot line, and the fantasy is Ryan Murphy's typewriter.
Yeah. The fantasy model.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, yep. He's been with him for many, many years. It's got a sticky shift key, but he never used a shift key.
No.
Very rarely uses punctuation.
Or spaces in between words. Yeah.
But it's more of a word jumble that he gives it, and the writers just take it and it's like try to, you know, it's like you can go diagonal, backwards, upside down, like, and then there's the script.
Yeah, the first four or five words you find, that's going to be the theme. Yeah. Do they relate? Who knows?
Yeah, he gives hints. There's like a hint for the first two or three.
So that's all of the feedback that we have. We are really looking forward to this season. I guess I'll let you speak for yourself. I am. I'm really excited. I'm having a lot of fun.
I mean, it's good when it's good. It's good when it's bad.
I think in between these episodes, maybe I'll try to slip in some classic 80s horror to watch on my own. Apparently, this movie Camp Sleepaway has some sort of influence. That's one I haven't even watched or anything. So maybe that one.
I don't know all about all that, but one thing we do every October for the last two Octobers is the annual Spooktacular.
Third annual Spooktacular.
We have yet to come up with a catchy name for the third Spooktacular.
Yeah, I need to. What's a popular like naming convention for third movies? Because you know, first movies are good.
Uh-huh.
Sequels are usually not the best, but then the third movies always come back strong.
So yeah, like
so this has got to be strong.
Like a three-time champ's called the three-peat. Maybe we can call it the spook-peat.
Well, we'll workshop it a little bit.
You should link the Spooktaculars in the show notes too, so people can kind of get a vibe of what we're going. So what the Spooktacular is essentially, we watch a bunch of scary movies and we talk about them.
Yes,
and we release them in October, and we're hoping to do a little bit bigger and better on that this year.
Yes, we also have a forum thread for suggestions if anyone wants to throw any out there. But we will be looking forward to talking to you again next week.
Yep. Next Friday, we'll be talking about the second episode of 1984. Send in your feedback to ahs@baldmove.com. You can also, get on the forum action, forums.baldmove.com, and follow us on all social medias at baldmove. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
Satan, Satan, Satan.